it seems like a lot longer. And it's amazing. I really like you folks. I really do. It wasn't that I didn't think I would like you last night, but you've been so lovely and open, and it's been so easy to talk to you, and I was going to say mess with you, but I don't think that's exactly right. Mix with you might be better. Where's Mike? Did you leave me? Jeez. I think I'm going to Minneapolis soon. Check out the territory. Okay. Yeah, it's been... I haven't done this for a while. Usually when I give a retreat, we have one talk on Friday night, and then if I'm at a Jesuit house, it's usually three on Saturday and then one on Sunday morning. This has been really... I wouldn't say it's tired me out, but I think you must be sick of seeing me up here. Say no. More. Oh, geez. Well, anyway, I'm going to talk tonight about forgiveness and about doing that ninth step, because no retreat. I never leave a retreat without having talked about those old ideas and somehow or other addressing the issue of forgiveness and a few tips on how to do amends. I think amends are absolutely so crucial. Sometimes I think we read those promises and we forget where they are. It says before we're halfway through what? Cleaning up 8 and 9. You know, this is a whole deal. It's not one piece. I'm going to sit and read some books, or I'm going to sit and meditate, or, I'm going to do a fourth step, and then I'm done. It's a whole process whereby, as I said, we do step one. And I'm going to, before we leave, write down, not tonight, but tomorrow morning, the principles of each of these steps. Because sometimes I see the principles, and they're written as one word. I don't get one word. I get an idea. For example, to me, the principle for step one is, I am not the boss. I don't get to have my way, or however you want to word that. I get ideas when they're put into context. And I will try and leave that with you. So we've taken a look at what we can do and what we should do about those defense mechanisms. That's really what I think the stuff is that we're after in step six. Would you agree, Bob? Those things that we do to get our way and that we do so we can get along. And whoever gets trampled on in the process, that's what happens there, and that's what has to stop. And then we come to this part in step 8 and 9 where we make this list. And I think if ever... The assistance of a sponsor is required, it's required here. You know, one of the things the book suggests is that we don't, you know, as soon as we're sober, go start running around to people and saying, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. You see, that doesn't work. We haven't developed any credibility. You know, most of us, they've heard our promises, they've seen what we've tried to do, and then we break our word. And they're sick of hearing, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And that's why it's better maybe to say, you know, I am taking another run at this. I'm sorry for what I've done. But let's see how this works out. And when you see that I'm, however you word that, then you develop a little credibility. But if we go immediately and we're trying to say, I'm sorry, there's no way it's going to work unless you're a different kettle of fish, because it takes time to change the way you think about things. It takes time for the truth of the program and the truth of spirituality to be massaged into you so that you start to act different, you start to see the world different, and they can see that there is a change in you. And when they can see that there is a change in you, then you can come with your amend. But that, to me, is where I think my sponsor was extremely helpful to me, and I think that's where I do some really good work with sponsees when they're in this process of making amends. I think so. I've heard all kinds of stuff. I've heard people say, my sponsor said that, you know, I can just wait until I meet the folks. Hey, when I was doing stuff, I went out to meet them. I found them somewhere. You know, and if you've got amends to make, I think it's appropriate that you go looking for the people and see where they are and do the best that you can to find them and get it cleaned up. Every once in a while, you know, you get caught, like I'm caught in something I was talking to Bob about, where I can't make an amend to somebody because of something legal that's going on, and it does not feel good. But what I can do is this. You know, sometimes we get caught in the dealings of the human world, and for one reason and another, but I'm not stopped from doing this because I know that that person is a God being. Whether she's awake or not is not my business. It's important that I be awake and that through all of it, I see that God lives in her. I loved it when I heard Sandy say, God loves us. That was his idea of unconditional love, that God loves us even when we're sinning or so-called doing things that we shouldn't be doing. After I have had sponsees go through the process, I just do with them what my sponsor taught me to do. And that was, once I had made that list of the people that I had harmed, and had done that piece where I tried to put myself into their shoes to experience what it would have been like to be on the receiving end of me and to write down a few things, then we start getting ready to do the amends. And my sponsor had me get two by three cards. And I think that's a great idea. Because when you go to make an amend, you want to make it as complete as possible. If you go without any writing at all, you don't have to go with a big to-do. But if you have a little card, you can write some things on there so that when you go to make the amend, you can make some reference to that so that chances are, when you are finished making the amend, it has been as complete as it can be at that time. A nasty thing that sometimes happens is people go and they don't prepare properly, and they go and off the cuff they make an amend, and then they realize, I forgot something. Now, what are you going to do with that? You've made the amend, you've put the people through that process. Are you going to phone them again and say, oh, by the way, I forgot something. Let's tear the wound open again. So what I have them do is let them think it through, and then they come and we talk about it. Like, what are you going to say to them, to the person you're going to make the amend to? Is it appropriate that you say to them, I now am sober a while, and part of the program is that I make amends? Or are you going to say to them, as you would, I believe, with some people, I would not go to them and say, I'm in AA, and this is part of my program. I would say, I am doing a life review, maybe. And, you know, I'm taking a look at some things I need to change. And I remembered some things that had happened between us, and I want to make amends. You know, because I find that some people have a sensitivity to hearing about AA. And as soon as, because it's been dragged through the media, some people have no idea what it really is, and they have a preconceived idea before you ever get to that. I'd sooner have people go and say, I need to talk to you because I know that I've done some things. And then as you're talking, if that comes up, then you can say that. Each situation is unique. Next, after you've done that, then this is what I see I've done. And you make some notations so that you know what the things are that you've done. Just a few little reminders. And this is how I see I've hurt you. And this is how I plan to make it right. Is there anything you need to tell me? That is, to me, is the kicker. Because after you've done this, it's all about the way you've seen things. And I have seen that some of the very best, some of the most important amends that I have seen made come through that last question. Is there anything that you need to tell me? I had a sponsee some years ago. She was married to an older man. And, you know, he was maybe not the most attractive man on the planet. He was a nice man. But, he had a bit of a paunch and so on. And she had been carrying on at parties and so on. So she got to make the amend. And she came to me and she could not believe what had happened. Because as she made the amend, she said to him, she did the things that she had done. And when she got to the, she thought it was complete. And when she said to him, is there anything you need to tell me? He said, yes, there is, and he started to cry. He said, all that stuff that you said, you know, you never slept with those guys, etc. He said, I knew that. But he said, when you drank, he said, you made fun of me. Sometimes in public, you made fun of my lovemaking. You made fun of my body. You see, she'd be in a blackout. She had no idea of what she had done and had torn that man apart. And so he got to tell her that, and she got to make the real amend and say, I'm really sorry, and do whatever had to be done. And I have to tell you, this is now 18 years later, and they're still together. This is a powerful thing that we do. When we are willing to take responsibility, you know, I think that sometimes people get stuck on this. I did so much crap. Yeah, we all did so much crap. But the thing is, okay, we did it. What am I going to do? Now relive it over in my head and keep on with it and stay. That's really staying stuck. So you did it, you do your fourth, and you get it cleaned up, and you go make your amends. I think one of the most interesting amends that I made was I made an amend to a sponsee that had a woman that I had one time sponsored. And, it was a difficult relationship. And she always felt, you know, that I had helped her a great deal. But I don't know, there was something, we'd clash from time to time. And the day came when I was cleaning up my life, and she came to mind. And so I decided it's time to make an amend to her. And because it had been that kind of relationship where there was a little sharpness on her part from time to time, and there was a little sharpness on my part from time to time, I guess somewhere in the back of my mind I thought, well, probably she'll make an amend to me too. And, but my sponsor said, don't count on anything. You're cleaning up your side of the street. You pick up your garbage. That's your job. So we got together, and I did my amend. And And then came the question, is there anything you need to tell me? And she said, yes, there is. And I thought, here it comes. She said, you're a jerk. And she said, my father told me there would be people like you on the planet. And she proceeded to take some strips off me. She said, you know, you talk a good program, but she said, you don't always live it. And my sponsor had told me, he said, whatever that person, if anybody ever says it, you close your mouth and listen, because God's given you a message. You say thank you and you go your way. And I was so happy that he had prepared me for that, because even though she did not make an amend to me, I was quite okay with what she said. And I could listen to what she said and walk away with my dignity intact and having done what I needed to do, which was pick up my stuff on my side of the street. And as it turned out, after that, we became, I think, better friends than we had ever been. So I think the utmost prudence is required. You know, and there are situations, and I'm not going to go into those, where there's been some sleeping around, and sometimes people don't know you've been sleeping around. That's where you use your sponsor and allow yourself to be guided in those places and times. I think the reason that one of the reasons why amends are so absolutely powerful are because forgiveness has to take place. Do not go to make an amend if you are burning with resentment towards somebody. If you're not clear with somebody, don't go until you are. Because one of the things that makes an amend work, you see, I find it doesn't happen necessarily immediately, but if I am willing to go to the fourth dimension and to see that you live in the fourth dimension in your essence, if I'm willing to do that, eventually good has got to come from that, because what you have done is you have moved to the realm of God, and that's precisely where healing takes place. We can't fix this stuff. Man at his own level always fails. It's no question about that. We have to go to another dimension. So I want to talk a little bit about forgiveness. And I'm going to talk about some things the Master said. And when I refer to the Master, I'm talking about a person on the planet some years ago named Jesus. And I am not talking, don't get your danders up, I'm not talking about him from a religious perspective. I'm talking about him as someone who lived on this planet and who lived here in an enlightened fashion and who lived here clean and who seems to have known things that I don't know that there ever has been a master on the planet. There have been some great ones, but the one I know the best is this one. And what your religious persuasions are, or what you think about that person, that's your business, not mine. I'm talking about him as I would talk about any great teacher. And one of the things he really stressed was forgiveness. The thing that interests me is that he not only talked about it, he lived it. You know, so that yesterday was the day when we commemorate the crucifixion. And in the Bible, it tells us that as he was dying, he said, Father, let them go free. They don't know what they're doing. Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. You know, I think back to what Chuck used to say. Stop judging, Mildred. Stop judging. Because when people see better, they will do better. And he understood, based on that, they don't know what they're doing. So let them go free. Another time he said, in one of the talks that he was giving, he said, if you do not forgive others, you cannot be forgiven. And that sounds kind of vindictive. But it isn't in the context that he was saying it. Because if you... See, I think forgiveness is dependent on the attitude of heart that we take toward our fellow man. This man who was on the planet stressed this. He said, do not judge your brothers. Do not condemn others because you haven't walked in their shoes. You don't know what's going on. You know, we can look at each other. We can even tell each other what we think is going on, and it may be something quite different as you really get to know yourself. And that's why he said, do not judge and do not condemn. And if I will not forgive you, in a way, I am condemning you. I'm saying, I'm looking at you as a bad person. And so he said, if you do not forgive your brothers, you can't be forgiven. It's not a vindictive statement at all. See, and in the Our Father, if you say the Our Father, better be careful there. Because there we set the tempo for how we are going to be forgiven by God. You know, because we say in there, forgive us our debts in the very same way that we forgive others. See, and that's why I said before, you know, as you grow in this program and as you see what's going on in yourself, you begin to understand, yeah, I believe that God is my life, but it does not mean that every day I walk without any kind of transgression where I judge somebody or whatever it is that happens. I think that if you look at the New Testament, forgiveness became the central issue of everything that he said. How I see you, how I treat you. I can't get away from that. You know, oftentimes people wonder why their life is such crap or why they're not moving forward. Take a look in here and see what you see when you look at your neighbor. As I said before, I don't have to like you. There's no place that it says I have to like you. Life is what it is. What I have to be able to do is to look with the eyes of the Spirit and see the Spirit within you. And if I can do that, you know, it's been my observation, I like people a lot more. I like a whole lot more people, and people look a lot nicer. And when you put out that energy, there's a different experience that goes between people. I say it again. I think that spirituality, and this man that I read a lot of, Joel Goldsmith, he says it on a number of occasions. He says that spirituality is the most practical thing we can do. And I know if you said that to a group of people who don't have the backgrounds that we do, they think that was ridiculous. Go to the university and get a PhD. That's practical. Well, that'll help you do things in the human world. But the practicality we talked about this afternoon, getting in touch with who you are and the larger picture. So, he told some stories. This man did. And one of the stories he told was the story of the very rich man who was owed, let's say, $10,000 by another man. And this second man came and said, I don't have the money. And by the laws of the land at that time, he could have been put into prison. And the rich man forgave him his debt. So the man who had owed the $10,000, he went out, and a man came to him who owed him only $1,000. And he said, please forgive me my debt. And the man whose debt had been forgiven said, no, I will not forgive you. You will go to prison until the debt is paid. At which time, the original man, heard this, and he called him, and he said, I forgave you $10,000. And when somebody came to you who owed you far less, you would not forgive that man. Now you will be held accountable. See? So, I love that story. I love the story of Mary Magdalene, you know, who she had, you know, was a woman of the streets. And somehow or other she had been attracted to the teachings of this man, and she brought fine oils to a dinner where he was present. And she anointed his feet and brushed his hair, etc. And one of the disciples said, this is wasteful. We should have given this money to the poor. And he said, you know, I came into your house. He said, you did not extend to me any of the courtesies that are customary in this country. And therefore, he said, leave her alone. And then there's the story of, well, it was a statement that he made. He said, if you come to offer your gift at the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, go first and try to be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. See, I think that's why Chuck used to hammer it home. You think you're separate, Mildred. Get it right. And the same, and Einstein, look at, you know, he kept at it, saying there's only one of us here, and we better start to get that right. And the last piece of that I will say was, at one point, the master was talking about forgiveness. And Peter said, how often do I have to forgive my brother? Seven times? And the master said, no, 70 times seven. What he was talking about was, as often as it's necessary, as often as you feel out of sorts with your brother, forgive the brother, because the number seven was a number that meant do it as often as you have to do, as, you know, as often as is needful. I had my notes mixed up. I thought I had them all in order. Here we are. You know, sometimes we really carry some big pain inside, don't we? And, you know, I think that a lot of the things that we talked about really are a preparation for talking about forgiveness. Because I think it's one of the most important issues that we have to deal with. Life isn't going to go very far. Not from this standpoint, not if we're relying on turning our will and our lives over to the care of God, if we're holding our brother and will not forgive. What are some of the problems with this business? One of the things I hear is, I have to forgive and forget, and I can't forget. I think that's an old idea. If you have had a difficulty with somebody, something that has really been significant and has hurt you, let's say it has been forgiven, how are you going to forget that? You know, it's like somebody one day cut me with a knife years ago, and some students were having a fight in school, and I got in the way, and I got cut. I still have the scar. And I think that's the way it is. We have the scars of things on the body, and I think we have the scars of things. To have a scar is just a memory that this happened. And I think sometimes, don't deny yourself the feeling that I have forgiven fully and freely. because you still remember that it happened. There's a big difference between there being a sting in something and the sting having been removed through forgiveness. I hear people say, act as if it never happened, just forget it. I don't think that's possible. You see, you can't, if there has been hurt, the work has to be done. You know, like the book said, there's so many things that can help us. Like in step 10, where Bill says, it's a spiritual axiom that if I'm disturbed, if I have taken offense, my ego is up and running. You know, and there'll always be people who say, oh, you know, you don't have to put up with that, and they shouldn't have done that to you. Keep your own counsel. That's what I do. Nobody can tell me what I should take offense at or what I shouldn't. And if people say to you, act as if, I know that doesn't work. Because if there has been offense, it has to be cleaned up. And that work has to be done. Get over it doesn't work. And I think often, to say that to somebody, to a person with a broken heart, I think is cruel. If you come and say, I can't forgive, this is what happened, and, you know, I am really hurting, I think we can do the courtesy, first of all, and have the compassion to talk to that person and help them through it as best we can. And then there's the whole issue of complexity. You know, there are some things that happen that, in a sense, they're not that big. Not too long ago, somebody was in my house and went to the library, and I got a call that night from them, and they said, you know, Mildred, I took a book, and I lost the book, and I will replace it. Please forgive me. Well, that's really not a big issue, is it? I think of the impact of the Brothers Karamazov. In that book, there's the story of how the master of the farm saw a woman with her little boy outside, and the little boy was playing with the master's dogs, and he was throwing rocks at the dogs, not throwing rocks to hurt them, just playing with them, throwing rocks. And the master was so incensed that this woman who worked on his fiefdom would let her son play with the dogs, that he set the dogs on the little boy, and in the story she's forced to watch her son being killed by the dogs. Those two things are quite different, aren't they? There are issues that are really big and that are life-changing if we're ever going to get past the need to forgive. I don't know what has gone on in your life, but some people have big stuff. So there's the issue of complexity, and I think there's the issue of insight. And that's, again, where I think you need a sponsor. Maybe you need a spiritual advisor, somebody who can talk you through it, who can help you through it. Because if you bury it inside, people who work on this kind of thing tell us that some of our diseases are really created by what we carry inside. Our immune systems just can't handle it. So, what are some things that might help us? A few that I'd like to suggest. Think of the person who hurt you the most. Remember something. You don't have to do this alone. You have the grace of God to help you in this process of forgiveness. Second, ask to have the perspective of God's Spirit. If you come at this from the ego perspective, I can tell you right now, you will be stuck in unforgiveness for a long, long time. third, see people as people. See, we know now that 80% of what we see comes from behind our eyes. It's the stuff that we've experienced. It's the stuff that the false self tells us. It's the old belief systems that we're dealing with. So, what do you see when you look at a person? Who wounded you? Do you just see somebody who's wrong, and is that all you can see, or can you look further than that? If we filter the image of the person through our wounded memories, and we call them a villain, and we shrink him down to the size that we would think that we need to shrink him down to, and sometimes we say things like this: well, he's just an animal, you know. And she's a cheat, and whatever else. It's going to be very hard to get past to the forgiveness that we need. If we can get past our labels, I think we'll find it a lot easier to forgive. I have a friend who's in Denmark. His mother is a prostitute and an alcoholic. This is how he talks about her. He never says, "My mother is a prostitute," and he never calls her an alcoholic. This is how he speaks of her. He said, "My mother lives where she lives, and she happens to be an alcoholic and a prostitute." Big difference in the language. He's not labeling her. He's separating the person from what it is that she does. So the last thing that I'll say about forgiveness is this. Forgiveness takes only one person. You know, if you have a situation in life where you can't contact the other person, you can still forgive that person for what it is. It takes only one person. So there, we can't say, "Well, you know, I can't forgive because I can't contact them." Reconciliation is the second piece. See, after you have talked to somebody and the forgiveness process has taken place, if indeed you can talk to one another, you may not want to have lunch, but that's the reconciliation process. And in some instances, you can go beyond the reconciliation to the restoration, which means that the relationship is rebuilt, and you can have a stronger relationship than you ever had, even though some really painful things have happened. So, I would recommend something. If you're having difficulties with somebody, you know, often parents haven't talked to children, or children haven't talked to parents, or spouses have been separated and there's bitterness, or it's friends. I was taught, don't just let the relationship be in that empty, nasty space. Send a card. You don't have to write a love letter. You can just send a card on a birthday or at Christmas or at Easter or whatever and just say, "Thinking of you, hope you're well." It's a lot easier if you keep up some kind of communication. It's a lot easier also on the other end for that person not to shut you out and just to kind of forget about you. And then one day you wake up and you want to make some kind of peace and there has been no communication. If you can, keep up the communication. Even if you put in a phone call and say, "I'm thinking of you. I know it's your birthday. Happy birthday," and that's it, or the card or whatever. I have found in a number of cases that is really helpful. I just want the gifts of forgiveness. I've thought about some of the gifts that I have received from doing forgiveness. Number one, forgiveness lets me out of jail. You know, Emmett Fox, in the Sermon on the Mount, talks in the Our Father. He talks about this, and he says, you're tied by a cosmic tie to the person you will not forgive. And so it lets me out of jail. Second, there are no unopened packages. I had a very difficult situation with a friend. I don't know, I guess it was about 8 years ago. Something had happened between us, and it took a little work to do the forgiveness work and for us to reestablish our friendship. And one day I got a call, and I was ever so glad that there were no unopened packages, that everything between us had been said, and I didn't have to think, I wish that I had done something different, because I got the call to say they found him dead on the street. He'd had a massive heart attack and died just like that. I have found that it opens my energy for being creative and doing things that I want to do. When I am stuck in ego and I'm stuck in the old ways, I'm not very creative. I find I'm much more joyful. I find that I have freedom of movement. There was a time in my life where I had to look into a room and see who was there and who was sitting where, or who was on one side of the street, because I owed money to everybody and there were all kinds of people mad at me and God knows what. And it's nice to have freedom of movement. And I think one's health is so much better. There has been so much written these days about the effect of what happens through anxiety and worry and bitterness and unforgiveness and all that, and how it affects our immune system, and how people, you know, wind up with arthritis and so on. You can find lots of stuff written on this. I have greater confidence when I walk clean on the planet. And so I think we sleep better and you get rid of a lot of that background noise. Now, it's been a long day, and I will not provide any more background noise to you. There was something I wanted to say, but I will not do it tonight because we have tomorrow morning yet for those of you that are able to come back. I want to talk to you about that letter on emotional sobriety that Bill Wilson wrote. I just think it's just such a powerful, powerful piece of writing. And we're going to talk about meditation. We're going to talk briefly about step 10. And I will talk some about prayer and meditation because I think it's crucial. And a wee bit on step 12. And then we're going to go home and we're all going to have wings. I may even just fly home on my own without a plane. So I hope you've had a good day. I've had a great day. And God bless you all. And I think we're going to run a meeting now, aren't we, Luther?